This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 228. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Bruce Goes Digital, Team 7 Suits Up, A Strange Home Life, Billy the Vampire Slayer, and Sidekick Tryouts. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, October 14th, 2012. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts, and blogs. Or you can subscribe via iTunes, where you can leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. Well, thank goodness you're back.
I'm happy to be back.
That's good. Well, we've got 2 weeks of comics to catch up on, so let's start with Legends of the Dark Knight number one. So this is another title where they're reprinting digital content, similar to the Batman Beyond Unlimited title. The great thing about these titles to me is that they're short stories. They're like 8 pages, which means there's no time to waste for the writer.
The writer gets right to the story.
Yeah, they can't afford to do anything but just tell the story. So in this case, they're going to be all Batman-related stories. The creators clearly all want to take a crack at this character. All creators at some point want to do Batman, which means you're going to get some really good creative talent involved in this title. So the first story is The Butler Did It by Lindelof and Lemire. In this one, Alfred proves that Bruce, in fact, has a weakness because they're arguing everybody has a weakness and Bruce says, I don't. It turns out to be his memories of Crime Alley, where his parents were killed. And so Alfred, we learn, pays a set of goons to beat him up there.
Sort of restaging the whole his parents get killed.
Right.
Now, I really like Jeff Lemire, but you can sure tell his art. And anymore, I'm almost associating it so much with Sweet Tooth that it's a little distracting in Batman.
That's true. I really like this story. Again, moved forward very quickly. And also, it was quite the shock. The idea that Alfred, just to prove a bet, essentially, says, no, you have a weakness and this is it.
Well, it was not only to win a bet. You know, he had to have Bruce recognize that so he could correct it.
Right. Second story was All of the Above by Larson and Jones. And this is Batman versus Amazo on the old JLA satellite. Amazo is an android with all of the Justice League's abilities. He can fly and super speed, and he's got the Green Lantern ring and pretty much everything. So Bruce is non-powered, and he's the only one on the satellite at the time, so how is he going to fight Amazo? Well, he essentially psychs him out, where at one point he hides behind a statue of himself, and we're hearing Bruce's inner dialogue throughout all this, and he says that the use of X-ray vision is only so useful because the only way to make it useful is to look layer by layer and concentrate on that. And so Amazo's looking for him. He hides behind a statue, and Amazo just looks at the statue and goes, oh, well, that's not him, and doesn't bother looking behind the statue.
And that seems kind of silly, but...
Well, but Amazo is very literal, being an android. And in the end, Batman teleports Amazo using the JLA teleporter, but teleports him in several pieces all over the world. Of course, not before he teleports himself out into space just to basically get in a better position. At one point, he's trying to get back onto the ship, and he drops the little controller out in space.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
And this is all happening. He has no protection. He's out in space. You know, but it's Batman, so he can do that. Third story is The Crime Never Committed by Taylor and Scott. So Bruce stops this desperate man from committing his first crime, and he does it based on these purchase records, sees that he's buying the various things. He's buying a gun. He's buying a bulletproof vest. He's buying all these various things. And the fact that he was recently unemployed. But we learn that this guy just wants to save his kid who's sick and basically needs some sort of treatment. Batman and Robin confront him just before he's about to commit the crime and stop him from doing it, convince him not to do it, because they say, this is what's going to happen. If you do this, yeah, even though you're unemployed and you're using your old badge, they'll know you did it because it's your badge.
Right. And he'd probably end up being shot by the security guard who's insane anyways.
Right.
But so, they just kind of left him there. That disappointed me. It's like you'd think that, you know, Bruce would have arranged to have for his kid to have treatment secretly or something.
But that's the secret of these short stories. You can't really have the epilogue because there's no room. It's just like, okay, here's the story. You're done.
Yes. Now, one thing I noticed about this one is it doesn't have like the little New 52 legend on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume that's because it's not one of the actual 52 comics.
Right.
But does that mean it's not in the New 52 continuity?
I think you can assume it's not.
Okay.
Books like this, they basically say they're outside the regular continuity, just like the Batman Beyond Unlimited is outside the 52 continuity.
Okay.
Team 7 number 1 by Jordan and Marino. This book was actually introduced during Zero Month. And this book is hopefully going to do what I've wanted to see happen just generally, is to fill in the five-year history gap to some extent as to what in the world happened in those 5 years. I'm hoping that's what they'll use this book for, because it does go 5 years back and it's going to continue on through that history.
Yeah, but I don't think it'll last.
You don't think so?
No.
Well, this was originally a Wildstorm title in the mid-90s, not with these same people, but the Team 7 concept was an old Wildstorm title. And this issue, its main purpose seems to be to introduce each member of the team via the commentary by John Lynch, a.k.a. Exposition.
Yes.
We know about Dinah Drake being this covert government agent, and we know she's later going to become Black Canary. Amanda Waller, who is apparently no longer Rubenesque.
And not really very old either.
No.
In previous continuity, she was always older and more experienced.
Right. And that's, of course, was one of the few remaining characters that wasn't a perfect body type in the DCU.
Yes.
So they had to get rid of her, apparently, or at least change her.
Well, you know, I have to say, you know, you're either too perfect or you're not a good role model for kids. So I don't know what they want.
Yeah. Now, we know she's going to end up running Suicide Squad because she's in that title now. Slade Wilson, who we know will later become Deathstroke. Alex Fairchild is the father of Fairchild and the Ravagers.
That's what I was wondering as I was reading this, is if they were related.
Yeah, it's her father. Cole Cash, who's going to become Grifter, although it seems like he already is. He already has the costume on. Kurt Lance, who's another covert agent for the government and is involved with Dinah.
And whom Dinah apparently kills at some point.
Right. Yeah, we know, based on the Birds of Prey title, that at some point she's going to kill him. And there's this new character, James Bronson, who essentially a guy with a war suit. And we kind of assume he's going to be cannon fodder at some point. So they break into this floating prison, which is really cool, I thought. Completely impractical and impossible, but very cool nonetheless.
Okay, yes. I agree with the impractical and impossible. It was weirdly shaped.
Yeah.
It's like We've seen a lot of floating things in a lot of recent pop culture.
Mm-hmm. That seems to be the new thing.
You know, floating cities and...
Mm-hmm. They break in and they end up finding these convicts that have been eclipsoed, for lack of a better term. And this is starting the Eclipso crossover we know is coming. That's also, we see it in Demon Knights, because there's a reference to a Black Diamond over in Demon Knights this past week.
Why are they starting all these crossovers all at once? We've got the Batman thing, the Green Lantern thing, this thing.
DC, if in doubt, they do crossovers. And generally big
events.
Yeah, well, crossovers are generally done to save foundering titles. And big events are done to save a lot of titles all at once.
Well, it just seems to me if you have to do three big events all at once, that speaks to a bigger problem.
Oh, absolutely. The whole goal of the New 52, at least to me, was to make things a little more approachable and simple for the new reader. But immediately doing all these crossovers and tying all these titles together, when they specifically said at the beginning that each title was going to remain pretty much by itself for the first couple years in order to get them to establish the individual titles.
Well, and now it's been a year,
and they've already
replaced a lot of the titles.
To the point where we believe there may actually be a fourth wave coming in January of
titles. Well, there must be because they've already announced a couple new titles.
Right. I like the title. I think you're right that it's probably not going to last very long because it really doesn't have a lot of established characters.
Well, and it seems to me that these team books that aren't the established teams don't seem to catch on too well. I don't know if it's because DC doesn't give them enough time or if it's just because the writers wear out or whatever, but they just never seem to last very long.
I think it's because although the fans say they want new and exciting stuff, they at the same time want the familiar. This is very unfamiliar. Other than a few side references and the addition of Dinah Lance, this could be a title from another company.
Right.
I mean, it's going to somehow tie in, but it's very tenuous right now. Phantom Stranger number one by DiDio and Anderson. So he runs into who is eventually going to become Raven in the Teen Titans, this girl who has this ability, these empathic abilities, and she's also the daughter of this demon Trigon we know. This is her first appearance in the new DCU. So he wants to help her. He's been brought to her by the beings that are controlling him. And so he ends up taking her to Stonehenge, where she originally escaped from Trigon and is like, why did you bring me here? Because that's where he's looking for me. And Trigon shows up and finds her. And Phantom Stranger says, essentially, well, I was just following orders from whatever the celestial beings.
The powers that be.
The powers that be. And he tells Trigon, well, this is somehow all going to be for the good that you're getting control of her again.
Yeah, Trigon seems to think that they're just pacifying him for now,
mm-hmm.
and he's going to come back later and destroy them. But
right. And in the end of the story, he ends up at this suburban home with a wife and family. Whoa, where did this come from?
Yeah, that seemed a little weird.
And then we see Pandora looking in the window of the house in the last panel. So obviously set up for the next issue or set of issues. But wow, Phantom Stranger's never had any type of home life prior to this ever in the DCU. He shows up, he does what he does, and then he's gone, and you never know where he went or what he's doing.
Yes, but he also didn't really have an origin story before either, did he?
That's true. It's always been very vague until now.
He was a stranger.
Yes. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Season 9, Number 14, from Dark Horse by Espenson and Moline. So we're meeting a male slayer, which would be, as far as I know, the first one. Or has there been male slayers before?
No, there have not been. It's always a girl.
That's what I thought.
But that doesn't really preclude. I mean, because Xander slayed vampires.
Right.
He just wasn't a, quote,
official slayer. Right. So we meet gay kid Billy, who's just trying to fit into school, but he's getting bullied. And he's also kind of training in secret just to try to defend himself against the bullies. We learned he has this crush on this other kid, Devin, who happens to be a fan of Buffy. In this city, these zompires attack. And as we know, these are vampire/zombies.
Yes, they're vampires that have no connection to the magic source, and so they're completely without control, and so they're zombied.
Right. So Devin suggests, well, Billy, why don't you become a slayer? Because he figures that zompires are easy to stake, much easier than regular vampires. And Devin is apparently going to become his watcher. So this whole story takes place outside the regular cast of the series.
I thought it was a really good story. Mm-hmm. I liked it a lot, but I wasn't sure how it would fit into the regular Buffy storyline.
Or will it at all?
Right.
I mean, you might well see this character have a story arc and then that's it. Love and Capes, What to Expect, number 3 by IDW, by Zoller. So this is, again, going back to this superhero situation comedy. We learn that Amazonia and Darkblade are having scheduling issues because now they're a couple and they're living together, but they hardly ever see each other because...
Darkblade is an agent of the night.
Right. And she suggests, well, maybe you need a sidekick to help you out so you don't have to be out all night all the time.
I thought it was pretty interesting. We did learn a little bit more about Darkblade's background, and apparently he's from a long line of Darkblades mm-hmm. that are secretly trained at a monastery or something.
Well, I think we've heard about the monastery before, but this was definitely more information than we'd seen before. Meanwhile, Abby is worried. Abby, of course, is pregnant with Mark / the Crusader's child, and she's worried that Mark's going to peek to find out the baby's sex via the X-ray vision. So she asked Dr. Karma to cast a spell to stop that from happening. And so he goes off to prepare the stuff for the spell. Meanwhile, Abby is getting this advice from other mothers who are basically telling her how terrible childbirth will be.
Yes.
And she's getting all freaked out. Darkblade is worried that he's getting older, and he thinks that getting a sidekick would just remind him of that, but he reluctantly agrees, okay, maybe I need a sidekick. So we end up seeing these multiple sidekick tryouts.
And I think one of them is Lindsay Lohan, but
yeah.
Well, because he says, I loved you in Mean Girls. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay.
We also meet a couple villains in person, which we've rarely seen in this title. You still don't have superhero battles, but you actually meet a couple of the villains. Just, there's at least in cameo. So in the end of the story, that Mark's mom calms down Abby. Basically explains
calms her worries about giving birth to a super baby.
Right. And in this shock ending, we learn that Amazonia's mother has had a stroke. So by tradition, she has to become queen and go back to...
Amazonia.
Yeah, Amazonia / Paradise Island.
And so that means that she and Darkblade may be breaking up.
That's right. Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, sad.
Sorry, there's no who's on the cover this week because last week was a double issue and we couldn't do the thing last week. So,
and Mark saw the cover
online.
And
I saw the cover online, so it just didn't work out. Damn you, double issues. Want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including my Star Trek Next Generation and Justice League animated series reviews. You can subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SF.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.